his house, and he learns the whole thing, you know, from morning till night. And, no, it's a real the whole day. And he lets whoever, if you want to come, you can all listen. He learns out loud. So if you come and sit there, you know, you don't go with him because, it's like the Hobbes, a person with Einstein, learning his theory of relativity with a third grader who knows third grade math, they're not really studying together. You're just sort of sitting there listening. But you can listen. And you listen, and so you learn. So people go up there. So, and a lot of friends of mine, they try to go up there. I have a friend who's been after the whole summer. I have friends who, they go to Manhattan for 2 days. You know, they send their wife, whatever. They go shopping. He goes to Umbara shopping. And it's not a bad idea. Compared to both sides. And, there are all these outlets over there. They're a place to get good deals. So the last 2 years, we discussed with my wonderful wife the first class, right? So she let me go for 3 days. So I was there for 3 days, and Baruch Hashem, I just sat with Rav Shechter for 10 hours a day, whatever he was learning, and it was an incredible experience. And in Israel, I work in Yeshiva Kotel, so I'm not really close to them at all, but I see him a lot, and I have a picture of him. So the Gedolim, each one's like different. The Benzal, when you see him, he sort of exudes kedusha. Interest like you one reason if you were still on the whole day, but like when he walks around, you sort of feel you're in the presence of Kedusha. So Rav Shechter is like that, but it's a different. Rav Shechter is godless, it's amazing. He is so simple, and it's amazing to see. First of all, he's always smiling when he's learning, and when he sees a Kiddush, and he's so pleasant to everyone, and people in the neighborhood, the guy, you say, oh, hello, hello. And what's amazing is when he sits there and he learns, sometimes kids come by. So, teenagers, older kids, younger, and these kids aren't really holding at his level. No one's holding at his level, but kids are certainly dinner. And they're asking questions like, what does this word mean? What does this word mean? If you're a gadol, so your time is very valuable. So, it's not really a gadol's job when he has his free time to learn in the summer to explain to a 10-year-old what a word on a mission means. That's just not what he does. What a gadol does is he learns and he learns and he learns, and it's his time to learn. But Shechter never says no, and these boys are sitting here asking these questions, and it was amazing. Everything, good question, it's important. There are different ways to do this work, and he made everyone feel so comfortable, and he's like such a pleasant person. His patience, it's like awe-inspiring just to see someone who's so at ease. Like the questions that were being asked, if I was running the learning session, I would have been a little annoyed. Here I'm trying to learn. People are asking, what does this word mean? Either they shouldn't be there or they should get out of in English or something. I don't know. That's not what you're asking. You ask other questions. And his patience, I mentioned before, girls ask me, I want to work on what meter should I work on? So I tell people that I think the most important meter to work on, if you want to be a good parent, a good parent, is patience. Have patience with your children. It's very, very important. I discussed it once with a borrower, and he thought it made sense. You have to choose one meetup to work on. You work on patience and be calm. The borrower went a step further, if that's for another topic, another time. And it was such a pleasure to see. He's so patient and always at ease and always pleasant. Whoever calls on the phone, he gets the craziest, shyest. And on the phone, he's fun. That's the things people ask him. And anyway, so it was a very big pleasure for me. I mentioned once before that he's so giving of his time. In other words, during the summer, when he has free time, he's not teaching, he could close himself up in a room and learn by himself if he wanted to. But that's not his style. His style is he wants to constantly be giving, be teaching. That seems to be his whole personality. He once spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu's major job was to be a teacher. So every Jewish leader, like a shul rav, his major job is to teach Moshe Rabbeinu. So I think, in a sense, that's where it comes from. So even when he's by himself, and he closes up the room by himself. Other people don't do that. Other people spend a lot of time by themselves. There are different approaches. But his approach seems to be that to always, if he has a chance, to teach more. He invited some of these boys to come on. Young boys to come sit and learn. Okay, yeah, one of your shyest, come on. And to always be giving, so giving of his time. I mentioned this once before. I was once walking with him. in Israel, it was a long walk. And it was a long walk because people kept on stopping him to talk to him. Shiloh and stories that they have a problem with their daughter, with the shidduch, and that someone's getting divorced. On the streets in Yerushalayim, people were asking. So somebody stopped him on the street. A man tapped him on the shoulder and said, the Rav Shach, this woman wants to speak to you. This was in, I don't need to start crying, but the street that King George turns into, Strauss. It was on, that's what it's called, right? Yeah. King George turns into Strauss on the way up into Geula. Right, that's great. So on Strauss, it must have been 20 minutes this woman was talking to him. So later when we were finishing the walk, I was thanking him for giving him so much of his time and whatever. So he apologized to me. Strange. He walked in the room for God to apologize to people. He apologized. He said, I apologize because I spent so much of your time when I was talking to that woman. But felt I had to, and he started telling me, I said, you doesn't have to apologize. But he said that this woman has a husband, he's not well. He's not well physically, he has issues with his back, and I don't know. And he's also not fully well mentally. And saying to Rav Schefter that the only thing that really gives her husband a lift and gives him, you know, fetus and simple in his life, he has a very hard life, is when he gets letters back from Ashefta. Ashefta writes back letters responding. I assume they're reasonably long letters responding. And that's an incredible thing. And that, you know, he gives him, and so this woman was talking to Ashefta about, was pouring her heart out to him about how you should keep on doing this, if he talks to her husband so much. So he was apologizing to me that he was sort of taking my time and I was sort of standing there. He's a very big chizuk for us. Many, many friends of mine and myself as well. As far as, you know, trying to give up your time to help people. It's like, they, you know, you think, oh, I'm giving some of my time compared to what he does. It's nothing. He's a go-go. Every second is like in the worth of $1 trillion. And he gives so much of his time. Oh, he's so few of it. It's unbelievable. People are with him the whole day, from 10 in the morning till 11:30 at night. But everyone's by himself. It's very, it's unbelievable. I mean, I know because I was there, 10 to 11:30, minus lunch and dinner. There's always somebody sitting there. I mean, 3 days with me, but other people also. And there's always someone sitting there. Anyway, so it's a big visit. It's a big Swiss that we have to have kind of hard people like that. So if you have a chance to hear him speak, you should rap it. He's speaking anyway. He speaks in his wife things sometimes. He speaks everywhere. In Stern. Any of you heard of the Shir Committee in Stern next week? My sister was head of Shir Committee once in Stern, in 10. So she spoke to our chef, she invited him to speak, and she went to Pastor Shabbos. So if you chance to hear him speak, you should go in here and speak. Okay, let's begin. Tonight's Shir, as I guess, surprise, surprise, one of the topics, well, it was like four or five topics. One topic is Rav Hirsch's approach to Chumash Devarim. He has a very interesting approach to Chumash Devarim. A second topic is going to be the Chassidish approach to Beit HaMeraglim, particularly the Svasemis' approach, which sort of fits with Rav Hirsch's approach to Devarim. Rav Hirsch doesn't say it, but it sort of fits. A third topic we're going to discuss is the Sfarno's general description of what life in the Midbar was like for Bnei Yisrael. The Sfarno's general description of what life in the Midbar was like for Bnei Yisrael fits hand in glove with the Svasemis' approach to Chet HaMeraglim. We're also going to discuss a little bit in general, surprise, surprise, Rav Hirsch's approach to the Mishkan and how it all connects together to Rav Hirsch on Devarim and to the Svasemis' approach to Chet HaMeraglim. And then, of course, we'll discuss a little bit how all of this should affect us in our daily lives, particularly in the transition from Eretz Yisrael to America that all of us, all of you are making, made, in the process of making. And okay, so let's begin. Now, Chumash Devarim is interesting. It's called Mishneh Torah because a lot of the mitzvos in Devarim are repeats from earlier parts in the Chumash. Okay. Mishneh means a second time. That's one shot, a repeat. So since a major part of Devarim is a repeat of earlier mitzvos, so it's called Mishneh Torah. Rav Hirsch gives a list. He gives a list in the second paragraph in source number one. That's the list of the Rav Hirsch gives very complete lists. that's a list of the mitzvos in Zevarim that are repeated from other parts of the Chumash. Okay. However, it first points out, it's not really fully accurate to say that all the Sefer Dvarim is a Mishnah Torah repeat. It's not true. There are many, many mitzvos that are mentioned for the first time in Chumash Devarim. And that list is in the first paragraph. If you open the first paragraph of Source 1, he has a list. The mitzvah Shema is mentioned for the first time in Chumash Devarim. Lo Sis Chatein, Yisr to marry a Goyim. Yisr Hanoa from Avodah Zorah. Now, this Avodah Zorah is mentioned already. But the Yisr to get Hanoa from Avodah Zorah, which is not mentioned earlier, is mentioned in front. I'm reading just the list in the first paragraph of Source Number 1. Birkach HaSamazon is mentioned there, and Lotzatzu Kein L'Hashem Elokeichem. That means not to serve Hashem in the way that you serve Avodah Zorah. Yisur HaFama. In other words, you notice there are a whole list of added chumras of the beginning of Avodah Zorah. The mitzvah stuff was mentioned. It's not mentioned earlier. The Chumash don't mention in Devarim. So Rav Hirsch is bothered at the opening of his parish on Chumash Devarim. Why? Why these mitzvahs? You know, there has to be a reason. There has to be a reason why Hashem, like, sort of took Sefer Devarim and had the focus of Sefer Devarim be these mitzvahs. A, the mitzvahs that are written for the first time, why are they in Sefer Devarim? And a similar question, why this list, why these mitzvahs are repeated? The mitzvahs are repeated, the mitzvah of Dayanim, Aseret HaDibros, Ibra Bodhazara, things like that, Pesar Taiva. That means when it's mutter, how it's mutter to eat food, to eat meat, you know, with shrit and everything. How come these mitzvahs are the ones that are repeated, and others aren't? And if we can sort of figure out a theme, if we can figure out some overarching theme which binds these mitzvahs together, that will be our theme of Chumash Devarim. And whatever that theme is, hopefully will make sense. It'll fit with Chumash Devarim. So that's what our first tries to figure out. What is the overarching theme? What is the common denominator behind the list of all of the mitzvahs that are mentioned for the first time and all of the mitzvahs that are repeated again? And he comes up with the following idea. He starts with one very glaring mitzvah, which is the mitzvahs of Yom Tov. In Parshas Emor, the Torah gives a list of the Yom Tov. It starts with Shabbos, and it mentions all the Yom Tov, all of them. It mentions Shabbos, and Pesach, and Sukkot, and Shavuos, and Shmini Atzeres, and Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, all of them. In Re'eh, the Torah repeats Yom Tov. But when it repeats Yom Tov, it only mentions the Sholosh Regalim, Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos. Now that's a very striking contrast. Here we have Yom Tovim, all the special days. In Emor, it's all of them. And in Re'eh, it's just the Sholosh Regalim. So it must be, so our first is assuming, and it's a reasonable assumption, somehow there's a reason why only these three are repeated. And maybe if we can figure out the reason why these three are repeated, that'll give us an insight into, well, what's the Devarim all about? What differentiates between these three and the other Yom Tov? If you pace up Sukkot and Shavuos compared to Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shmini Atzeres, you can figure out the difference between them. And so whatever is special, pace up Sukkot and Shavuos, and they're the ones repeated in Zvarim, that might be the first step to finding the secret, to discovering the secret of what Chumash Zvarim is all about. So that's the third paragraph of Source Number 1. He says, perhaps consideration of one of these groups of laws, some of which present themselves as repetitions, will give us the key with which to answer this question. In chapter Tez Zion, the laws of celebrating festivals are repeated, but at first glance, it strikes one that here, in this repetition, only Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot are mentioned. Whereas the comparison with the chapter on the festivals in Emor makes one miss mention of Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shmini Atzeres. So the question is, what's the difference? So our first says as follows. Okay. Well, number one, and this is the correct point, but it's not the major point. Number one, Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos, aside from being Yom Tovim with mitzvot, whatever, they have a connection to what? To the, to. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's the second point. That's correct. The second point. But what do they have a connection to? Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael. The agricultural cycle. Pesach is when things are blossoming, and then there's then when things are first cut, and in Sukkot it's Chag HaAsev. There is a connection between the Sholosh V'Galim and the agricultural cycle. Shabbos is not connected with the agricultural cycle. Rosh Hashanah and Kippur are not connected with the agricultural cycle. Shemini Atzeres is just a connection with Sukkot. It's not part of the agricultural cycle. So that makes sense. That the Jews now, and this is the beginning of the answer, Bnei Yisrael are about to enter Eretz Yisrael. So it makes sense to focus on mitzvos, which they're going to need specifically in Eretz Yisrael. So if Hashem is going to repeat the Yom Tovim, which ones is Hashem going to emphasize? He's going to emphasize those Yom Tovim which have more of a connection to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, when Hashem's repeating all the Yom Tovim mentioned in Emor, for whatever the reason is, but now Chumash Devarim is the Chumash of getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. That's what Devarim is. Chumash Devarim is the Chumash of getting ready to enter Eretz Yisrael. So which ones are re-emphasized? Those which have a particular connection to Eretz Yisrael. So this is already the beginning of the answer. We haven't gotten to a deep hashkafic issue, an overarching hashkafic theme, but this is a simple idea. Our first is pointing out, obviously, that Chumash Devarim is in the 40th year of the Midbar. Moshe is about to die. He's given Bnei Yisrael sort of their last piece of Musar, their last piece of education before they go into Eretz Yisrael. So it makes sense that the theme of Chumash Devarim is entering Eretz Yisrael. So the re-emphasis of mitzvot, or some of the new mitzvot that are in Devarim, should fit with this theme of Eretz Yisrael. So on a very simple level, which of the seven special days fit with Eretz Yisrael more than the others? So Pesach, so the Shavuos fit more than the other ones. So that's why they're re-emphasized. That's very simple. That's simplistically. Going there, so those you need to know. Then Rav Hirsch goes on to give his really major theme, which we'll get to in one second. Yeah. Then he says, finally, this is the fifth line of the second column. This is the beginning of Rav Hirsch's major theme, major yisod of Chumash Devarim. Finally, for all three, the important duty of the whole nation pilgrimizing up to meet together to form a national circle to make the sanctuary of the Torah the national center point would naturally only start with the decentralization of the nation in the land. Whereas in the wilderness, the nation was always united about the center point. That paragraph, that sentence/paragraph, our first has these long sentences. This is the essence of a person's approach. When Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar, they were all living right around the Mishkan. The Shekhinah was there. Wherever you lived in the Midbar, you woke up and you saw the Shekhinah. There it is, the Anan's right there. There was a central focus to your existence. What was the central focus to your existence? The Mishnah. That had an impact on you as a person. That you felt this constant personal connection with Kedusha in a very strong way. It had an impact on you as part of the tzibur. You naturally all felt united as part of being around this Mishkan. When Bnei Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael, they were losing that central focus of the Mishkan is at the center of my life. They're not going to have it anymore. The Jews are going to live up in Kiryat Shimona. They're going to live up in Lebanon. Part of Lebanon. They live down near Egypt. They live far away from Yerushalayim. You're not going to have this central focus. Oh, I wake up in the morning. I open my window, and there's the Beis Hamikdash. Chaim told a story that he knows someone who bought an apartment that overlooks the Har Habayis, and he thinks it's the apartment which was owned by the Aderis. The Aderis was Rav Kook's father-in-law. Forgot his full name. He was Rabbi Panovich and Amir. He came to Yerushalayim, through Rabbi Yerushalayim. He was brought, Rabbi Shmuel Salam was very old. He was like in his late 70s. He was Rabbi Yerushalayim in the turn of the century. So they brought him the Aderis, like, and he's getting old, so we'll bring him the Aderis to like take over when Rabbi Shmuel Salam is nipped. He's getting very old. So they brought him the Aderis to be the Rabbi Yerushalayim. and he died 2 years later. And Rav Shmuel Salant lived on another 30 years. He kind of hurt. He was like 98 when, or something like that when he was nifter. So the Aderis on his tombstone, it says he was nismane to be the Rabbi Yushuan. He never became the Rabbi Yushuan. He was appointed to become the Rabbi Yushuan. And Rav Shmuel Salant is going to die. He'll be the Rabbi. But Rav Shmuel Salant outlived him by 25 years, even though he was much younger. Anyway, so the Aderis owned an apartment with Obel Karabayas. And based on where this, I'm trying to tell the story that somebody knows someone who thinks he lives in that apartment. All right. Anyway, so that you don't have in Eretz Yisrael unless you happen to live, you know, right there over Har Abayis. So therefore, how come Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos are re-emphasized? Because Aliyah L'Regel, it becomes a crucial mitzvah. In the Midbar, Aliyah L'Regel, you get up in your house and you walk to the Mishkan. It's a 20-minute walk. It's not such a crucial mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. They went to the Mishkan. But in Eretz Yisrael, Aliyah L'Regel is crucial. The Jews have to maintain their connection with what? With the Beis HaMikdash. In the Midbar, they had it naturally. Wherever they woke up, there it was in front of them. They're coming to Eretz Yisrael. They're losing the central focus. They're decentralized. They're off out in all parts of Eretz Yisrael. Hashem said, no, don't forget. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, don't forget. You have to stay focused on the Beis HaMikdash, even though you're not in the Midbar anymore. It's going to be hard. In the Midbar, it was easy. You look up, and there it is. There's the Shechina. Wherever you were, the Shechina was there. Right? You know, you walk 10 minutes, you're at the base of Mikdash. In Eretz Yisrael, you have to walk 10 days. So therefore, what's Hashem re-emphasizing? Aliyah L'Regel. That's why Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos are re-emphasized, because they're crucial to Bnei Yisrael's existence in Eretz Yisrael. All the Yom are crucial, but these are more crucial, because what are we missing? What is Bnei Yisrael losing in the transition from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael? What they're losing is this intense level of Kedusha and Shechina, which is constantly in the middle of their lives. They're losing it. What is that called? Well, say at the end of the class, we call that seminar. But what's it called now? What's it called now? What's it called now? It's called the Mishkan. They're losing the Mishkan. So Hashem's giving them mitzvos, which will help them make up for this lack of the central Kedusha object in the middle of their lives. And Aliyah L'Regel, go back to the Mishkan 3 times a year to recharge your batteries. It's a very beautiful shot. That's why these are re-emphasized. Rav Hirsch goes on. Rav Hirsch goes on along this theme. How come in Chumash Devarim there are so many mitzvahs about Avodah Zarah added on? So that makes sense. We're going into Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Kanan. They're all of the Avodah Zarah. So we need lots and lots of mitzvahs to remind us to stay away from the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So again, our first theme is, Chumash Devarim is the Chumash of preparation for entering Eretz Yisrael. That's what it is. So the mitzvahs in Devarim, a lot of them on a technical level, because you're about to enter Eretz Yisrael, you have to have these mitzvahs. They're emphasized. One of them, so that's why you have the mitzvah of Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos. That's the Eretz, the part of the connects to the land of Eretz Yisrael. All the chumras and mitzvahs of Avodah Zarah. We're going to be amongst the goyim who are worshiping Avodah Zarah. But in a more fundamental level, what do you need in Eretz Yisrael? What do you need in Eretz Yisrael? You need to make up for what you're missing from the Mishnah, from the Midbar. And what you're missing is the central focus of Kedusha at the center of your lives at all times, i.e. the Mishkan. So many of the mitzvos in Devarim are there to make up for that which you're missing from the Midbar. And the first one is, so that's why you have Aliyah L'Regel is re-emphasized. The Mashal, in the second page he has a list there, mitzvos which are mentioned for the first time in Devarim. It's a very interesting list. Kriya Shema, the first paragraph on page 2. Kriya Shema, Tefillin, Mezuzah, Benching, Tzitzis. The mitzvah of mentioning Zikir Tzitzmai on a daily, Zikir is mentioned earlier, but the Chiyuv to say it every day is mentioned in Devarim. Why? But Hirshir says it again. It says as follows. For the people, why are these mitzvahs mentioned for the first time? For the people are going out of the hitherto influence of the central guidance, i.e. the Mishkan at the center of their lives, into an individual life, where more than ever, the Jew needs constant admonition to his calling, and even his garments are to become to a preacher of the duties of a Jew and the moral nobility of human beings. What that means is you're in the Midbar. and you're living literally in the shadow of the Mishnah. It's not so crucial to have mitzvah of Shema. It's not so crucial to have mitzvah of Tzitzis. It's not so crucial to have a mitzvah of mezuzah. I have to kiss the mezuzah, I'm staring at the Mishnah. I need to kiss the mezuzah when I leave my house. There's the Mishnah. Out my window is the Mishnah. It's not so crucial. I don't need so many daily reminders in my ordinary daily life. You keep close to Hashem. Remember Hashem. Remember the mitzvot. Remember your call. I don't need them so much. The Mishnah's right there in front of my face. Oh, I'm going into Eretz Yisrael. You're going to live in Kiryat Shmona. You're going to live out in the middle of nowhere, far from the base of Mikdash. You're not going to have the Mishkan outside your window. Oh, you need a lot of reminders in your ordinary daily life. Say Shema twice a day. Have tefillin. Wear tefillin. Pirkas HaMazon. In the Midbar, you're eating Mon. It's hard not to focus on Hashem when you're eating Mon. There's the Mon. Where'd it come from? Yeah, from us. I don't know if there's a medrash. My son said that it could be it's true. A medrash. I don't know. Maybe you know that he said that they said in the midbar the bracha hamotzi lechem min hashemayim. I don't know. It could be it's a medrash. I don't know if it's a medrash or he just maybe just said it as a joke. Anybody ever heard that medrash? That's a nice bracha to say. Hamotzi lechem min hashemayim. It comes from Shemayim. So, but you don't need brachas hamazon. The shlina is there. The mon is the shlina. You have to say a bracha on the mon. You have to say benching. Thank Hashem. Of course, it's from Hashem. Oh, Eretz Yisrael. You don't see the Shechina, it's not there all the time, as we'll get to. You don't see Neis Nigla all the time, that we'll get to in a few minutes. It's a parallel theme. You don't see constant Neis Nigla. So I need daily reminders. And tzitzis, my clothing in the Mishka, in the Midbar, you didn't need it. Your clothing has to have a reminder, that your clothing reminds you to serve Hashem very well. But in Eretz Yisrael, you do. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, when you don't have the Mishkan right within your midst, you need more reminders. I'm sorry. Tzitzis is mentioned earlier. I'm saying, why is this mentioned again? Again, tzitzis is crucial as a reminder to stay close to Hashem in your ordinary daily life. But Hirsch doesn't explain exactly, this is something missing. Like, how come some mitzvos are mentioned for the first time, and some are just repeated again as emphasis? He's taking these two groups as one block. That if you take the block of mitzvos, those which are mentioned for the first time, and those that are re-emphasized a second time, as a block, these mitzvos, their general theme is preparing B'nai Yisrael for entry into Eretz Yisrael, specifically preparing them for life without this central focus of the Mishkan, of the Shechina, or of Neis Nigla, which we'll get to in a few minutes, as a central part of their life. That is our first approach to Chumash Dvar. There's a pasuk in Dvarim which you don't have earlier in the Chumash. It's in I don't know where it is. It's page 219 in Chumash Dvarim. Yishamar Lecha. I'm not sure what paragraph this is. I didn't write it down. Anyway, it's Yishamar Lecha to be careful of Shevet Levi. Anyone know where that pasuk is? It's a pasuk about being careful and it's obviously a pasuk you test somewhere. It must be Parakeh. A pasuk you test. Very interesting pasuk. The pasuk basically says, take the levim seriously, and don't forget about the importance of the levim. I think. Let's see. Is that the pasuk? Or that's not it. Or that levim means verse. What? Verse. Oh, so it's somewhere else. Okay. So the pasuk says, yeah, here it's parak yud beis. Parak yud beis pasuk yitess. Hishamar lecha, be very careful. Pen ta'azov es halevi. Kol yamecha alad masecha. Be very careful not to forsake the levim all the days you live in Eretz Yisrael. Very interesting, which means, so in the context it means, the pasuk is talking about you have to give the levim maestros, that they have to have food to live. So just like there's a mitzvah to give the maestros, there's a lav, don't not give them maestros. But that's the pasuk shot. But without the context, the pasuk just says, be very careful, don't forsake the levim whenever you live in Eretz Yisrael. The pasuk basically is saying, you better be careful with those levim, they're very important people. How come suddenly in Eretz Yisrael, you have this special reminder, this special emphasis, be careful with the Levine. You have to take them, be careful with the Levine, give them the respect that they deserve, and be careful with them. So our first says as follows. Our first says, source number 3 on page 2, at the impending, again this word, decentralization of the nation settling in the land, the Levine living scattered among the people is of the greatest importance. They are the living nerves and arteries coming out from the center point, the sanctuary, by means of which the members are kept in spiritual connection with the brains and heart of the nation. They are the representatives of the sanctuary of the Torah in the midst of the people. It's a beautiful picture. The Levim, who works in the base of the Mikdash, the Levim's job, which was to teach Torah, says, Yodish Tefel Yaakov, Shevet Levi, they would teach it, B'nai Yisrael. They work several weeks a year, and they talk the rest of the year. So the Levim, if you picture the base of the Mikdash as the heart of B'nai Yisrael, heart of Eretz Yisrael, heart of B'nai Yisrael. The Levim are like the nerves and arteries that come out of the heart and feed the rest of the body, feed the rest of B'nai Yisrael. Why do they become so important as Yant Eretz Yisrael? Because of decentralization. When you're in the Midbar and the Shechina is right in front of you, so then, so the Levim aren't so brutal. I don't need the Levim. I'm staring at the Anan HaKavod right in front of me when I wake up in the morning outside my window. But in Eretz Yisrael, as if I'm from the Mesa Mikdash, ooh, I better make sure they're living in my neighborhood. I better make sure I go to Shirim in my neighborhood. Because I have to respect the Levim. Because I need that help, that constant daily help in ordinary life, to stay focused on Hashem, to stay focused on the Mishkan, even though it's not right in front of my face. Amongst the nation actively engaged in agriculture, cattle breeding, and the industries associated with them, such unproductive members of the community as the Levim could easily fall into disrepute. You look at the burden to the community. They may not respect and are not undervalued in their vital importance for the spiritual, moral, and national well-being of the nation. Hence, the repeated admonition not to neglect the Levi, the duration of remaining on your own soil, is essentially dependent on the esteem you're to give the Levi and the influence you allow them to have in your spiritual, moral development. You have to make sure the Levi helped run your lives. In the Mishkan, you have in the Midbar, you had the Mishkan running your life. It was right there. But in Eretz Yisrael, you have to have that connection to the Beis HaMikdash. Ah, that's the Levim. So this fits in my first general theme. How come this pasuk is only mentioned for the first time in Devarim? Because that's part of the idea of Chumash Devarim is the Chumash of getting ready for entering Eretz Yisrael, getting ready for living a life without that centrally located focus of the Shechina right in the center of your life. And to do that, Hashem gives us mitzvos which help us deal with living out there in Eretz Yisrael, far from the base of Mikdash. Shema, since this is re-emphasized, Birkas HaMazon, Mezuzah, all of these ordinary daily life mitzvos, the Chiyuv HaBeliyah LeRegel is re-emphasized. You have to go a few times a year. You have to go if you can. You can afford to come back to Israel during your vacation. And that's more or less what, if you can, that's what it's saying. And emphasizing the Levim, etc. That's our first approach to Chumash Devarim. But our first approach to Chumash Devarim fits very well, and it runs parallel to it fits very well with the general Hasidic approach to Beit HaMeraglim, which especially the way this Vasevis explains it. So that's page 3 and 4. Page 3. There's a famous question about Beit HaMeraglim, which is, the Meraglim were tzaddikim, full of manashim, plus to the people, they were tzaddikim. How could they do this aveira of rejecting Hashem and terrible things? How could they do it? So, in general, the Chassidish approach to things is try to view the world positively. It's a very good thing to do, try to view the world positively. So, the Chassidish approach to Beit HaMeraglim basically is, they're big tzaddikim. And it wasn't the faith of Taiva. It was a whole different type of faith. It was a faith completely out of good intentions. They had a mahalach, the Meraglim, they had an approach which made sense to them. And they felt that this was a better way to serve Hashem. But they were mistaken. What was their approach? Their approach was as follows. I'm quoting here the Rav Nachshoni, Avodos Parshas HaTorah, in source number 1. He quotes the Sfas and the Chassidish approach to Beit HaMeraglim. And in source number 2, I have some of the excerpts from the Sfas Emes itself. The gist of the approach is as follows. The Meraglim thought as follows. Here we are in the Midbar. In the Midbar, B'nai Yisrael led a life. So far, I've been focusing on what's our first emphasis in the Midbar? B'nai Yisrael had a life of the Mishkan was in the center of their lives. Woke up in the morning, took a 10-minute walk, there it is, the Anan HaKavod, the Shechina right above the Mishkan. As opposed to Eretz Yisrael, you'd be very far from the Mikdash. The Sfas Emes has a different emphasis. He says, in the Midbar, Bnei Yisrael's entire life was a life of Nes Nigla. Nes Nigla. That was their whole life, was Nes Nigla. The Nani HaKavod was there, the Shechina, you can see the Shechina back to Nes Nigla. The Mayim, the Mon, everything, their clothes got bigger as they got bigger. They never got worn out. These are all Nes Niglas. They lived there. Cool and nice people. And what did they do the whole day? They didn't have to make a pronoun. So what the Webinars would do the whole day? They were learning. It was one huge kollel. That was like in the Midbar. That was like in the Midbar. The Moroccan felt, you know, we're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. You have to plant. You have to do work for yourself. You're not going to have so much time to learn. It's not a life of nice people. Eretz Yisrael, compared to the Midbar, in a sense, in this Nakud, what they can step down. What's Eretz Yisrael? Beis Nister. The natural world of Teva. I mean, you had a Beis HaMikdash. And in the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael, there are Neis Niglas, right? That we mentioned before. The Mishnah mentions Neis Niglas could happen in the Beis HaMikdash. But basically, your ordinary life was Teva, was Neis Nister. You had to step down. And the Meraglim felt, we're not convinced that Bnei Yisrael is ready for that. If we go into Eretz Yisrael now, and enter a life of Nes Nister, Bnei Yisrael might fall apart. It's not time yet. We need another couple of years. I don't know how many, another four, I don't know, another whatever the plan was. It's not time yet. We can't go now to Eretz Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael can't handle entering Eretz Yisrael now and surviving as a nation of serving Hashem very well. Bnei Yisrael to serve Hashem very well in the Midbar, when they're in Kolel, when their whole life is Nes Nigla. That they're succeeding, but to go on the Midbar and the Eretz Yisrael, they're not ready for that. So the Meraglim's fate was, they really felt genuinely that what Bnei Yisrael needs is more time in the Midbar to stay in this cocoon, in this incubator. No, incubator is better. Incubator of Nes Nigla. That's what they felt. That's what the Meraglim felt. And they were wrong. They were wrong. Hashem said no. Hashem said, listen, I gave you 40 years in the Midbar. That's enough preparation, and the basic gist of going into, of entering Eretz Yisrael is exactly this point. It's time now to, Eretz Yisrael was basically the Midbar was a non-natural existence. What Hashem wants from Bnei Yisrael is not, oh, just serve Hashem in the Midbar when life is Nes Nigla. No! The whole purpose of the Torah is to apply the Torah into the world of Nes Nister. That's what the purpose of the Torah is. You go into Eretz Yisrael, you have an ordinary society, you have people who are farmers and people who are in industry. I first always mention that, farmers, industry. And when they're living a life of Nes Nister, and at least most are making a living or whatever it is, so they're still serving Hashem at a high level. So Hashem, when he sent the Meraglim, the whole purpose of the Meraglim was to help pave the way. To help pave the way for entry, this transition from the Midbar into Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Meraglim were supposed to do. In other words, what the Meraglim were supposed to do is parallel to what our first says Chumash Devarim is all about. Help pave the way for this transition into Eretz Yisrael. The Sfas Emes always has these beautiful diukim in the Tzukim. I'm sure you know this. Beautiful diukim in the Tzukim where you're like Lashonos in the Tzukim. So he says here a few beautiful things in source number 2. He says, that's why they call it Meraglim. Meraglim is from the Lashon of Hergel v'Teva. Hashem wanted the Meraglim to help bring the Torah into the life of Hergel, of ordinary daily living. That's why they call it Meraglim. Because Meraglim comes from Hergel. So to bring the life of Torah, of the Midbar, into the Hergel of daily life. That's in 2 Aleph. In 2 Beth, he has a beautiful word. It says, when the Meraglim going into Eretz Yisrael, it says they're supposed to v'yaturu at Eretz Yisrael. Vav, yud, tuf, vav, resh, vav. V'yaturu, which means to spy out the land. It's striking that the root tur is from Torah, is in that verb. The Sfas Emes says, v'yaturu at Eretz Kanaan means, v'derech remez, lehamshich b'chinas ha-Torah l'toch ha-teva. They're supposed to Torah-size Eretz Yisrael. That was the Meraglim's job. The Yaturu at Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim, what they were supposed to do was, listen, we're making a transition from the Midbar life of Nes Nigla. through Eretz Yisrael, the life of Nes Nistar, that's hard to do. We have to go spy out Eretz Yisrael and figure out a way, how can we bring our life of Ruchnias of Eretz Yisrael, of the Midbar, into Eretz Yisrael? How can we, Yatsuru, a verb, how can, a verb of, the verb being Torah, how can we Torah-size Eretz Yisrael? That was what they were supposed to do. Their mistake was, they felt they couldn't do it, they have to stay in the Midbar. You see that word, the Yatsuru? He's making, instead of being to spy out, he's saying tour is the root of tour as a verb is Torah. The Yatsuru of Eretz Canaan is a Torah-size Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Rabbin was supposed to do. And then the Sfashem says that this also fits with the mitzvos which were given to Bnei Yisrael right after Beit HaMaradim. The mitzvos they were given were Chala, Tzitzis, and Misachim. So the Sfashem says Chala, Tzitzis, and Misachim are mitzvos in the physical Neis Nishta world which correspond to the Neis Nigla things of the Midbar. Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar. They had the man. That's Neis Nigla food. They had the Ber Hamayim. That's Neis Nigla water. They had the Nani HaKavod. That's the Neis Nigla of the Shechina, which envelops Bnei Yisrael. The Meradlin felt, listen, without this Neis Nigla things, we can't survive. I said, no, you can survive. I'm going to give you mitzvos, which you can have in Eretz Yisrael, which will be Hashem saying, my way of helping you bring into your life of Neis Nistar this feeling of food comes from going to Eretz Yisrael. You're not going to have the man. Alright, so how is it possible without the man? When you have the man, you focus on Hashem. I'm eating Hashem's food. How can I remind myself, ooh, all the food, even when I'm in Eretz Yisrael, I'm planting, I'm working hard, doing it all myself. I'll forget about Hashem. How can I bring Hashem? How can I Torah-size my ordinary life? How can I bring Hashem into my ordinary, daily, Neis Nistar life of eating food? The mitzvah of challah. So challah corresponds to the iman. Nisachim is pouring liquid on the Mizbeach as part of the mitzvah of the Mizbeach. How can I remind myself that all drinks, all liquid comes from Hashem? In the Midbar was obvious. You had the bear. Oh, every day, every single day in the base of Mikdash, you had the Minchas Nisachim, the libations, they poured wine on the Mizbeach. The Minchas Nisachim was on the Mizbeach every single day, twice a day at the Karban Tamid. What's the message? That liquid also comes from Hashem. You don't need the bare mind. You have a daily reminder here in Eretz Yisrael. And also the mitzvah of Tzitzis. Tzitzis, the quote, this is in Gimel, in Source 2 Gimel, the Midrashim quote, Tzitzis is like having them, like the Arba Kantos, the Nenei HaKavod, it sort of surrounds you. It's like having the Shechina around you at all times. In the Midbar, you had the Nenei HaKavod. In your ordinary daily life, your clothing, which surrounds you, you're enwrapped in a mitzvah, it's like you're enwrapped wherever you are, within the Shechina. This is the beautiful pshat of the Sfasemis to Beit HaMaradlin. A, it explains how could they have done the faith. B, it explains very well why these three mitzvos are the three mitzvos given to Bnei Yisrael right after Beit HaMaradlin. Because these are the three mitzvos which Hashem was saying, this is what the Maradlin's mistake was. They felt it's impossible. It is possible. Here are the mitzvos that we would have had anyway. These are the mitzvahs which will help you bring the Torah into Eretz Yisrael. The Meradim were wrong. You can bring the Torah into ordinary daily life. You don't need the Be'er and the Mon and then the Hakavu. You can have Chala and Sakli and Tzitzis. And it explains on a Drash level the word Meradim and the word Be'atu. Okay. The Sfasemis' approach with Eitz HaMeradim, I think, I'm sorry, just to connect it. So I think the Sfasemis approach to Chetzim Meraglim, it runs parallel. It dovetails with it. It fits with it. It dovetails with our first approach to Chumash Devarim. That the Chetzim Meraglim was Bnei Yisrael felt, the Meraglim felt, we're not ready to make the transition from life in the Midbar of Neis Nigla to life in Eretz Yisrael of Neis Nistar. And our first says, that's what Dvarim's all about. How to make the transition. How do you make the transition from the life of the Shechina being right there staring you in the face? It's another way of saying Neis Nigla. It's the same idea. Staring you, there's the Shechina, to a life where you're living, and the Mishkan's over there, and I live far away. So exactly, all the mitzvahs, the Sfasemis focuses on Tzitzis, Nisachim, and Kala. What our first basically says is, all of Chumash Dvarim, if you look at it, analyze it carefully, fits into this theme how to make the transition from life in the Midbar to life in Eretz Yisrael. Some on a technical level, like Avodah Zarah, there's more Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael because of the Kananim, and some on a fundamental level, that when you're leaving the proximity, the centralization, the decentralized Mishkan, the center of your lives, you need more help in your ordinary daily life to stay close to Hashem. We step to Levim, the Mitzvah Shema, Tzitzis, Mezuzah, Tzvillin, Birkas HaMazon. Okay. Just to give a little background to the Sfas Emes' approach to the Beit HaMeraglim, you should be aware, it's in our Putin's writing, so Putin points it out. There's a beautiful Sfarno, striking Sfarno, this is page 4. It's source 3 on page 4. That the Sfarno describes what life in the Midbar was like for Bnei Yisrael. And he points out as follows. If you look at the Chumash sounds like, in Vayikra and also in earlier in Parshas Tetzaveh, the Chumash sounds like Aaron Cohen likes the menorah every day. It says Yarchus so Aaron. Aaron likes the menorah. That's what it sounds like in the Chumash. The Chumash also sounds like Aaron offers the Ketoros every day. That's what it sounds like. If you look at the Sukkim, that's what it sounds like. The Sfarno says it's not true. I mean, the Sfarno says that's not the halacha. It's true. That's what happened. That's not the halacha. The halacha is even an ordinary Cohen likes the menorah or offers the Ketoros. The Kohen Gadol had a special korban to bring. Every day, minchas chavitim. That's a separate carbon. But the Kohen Gadol didn't like, if he wanted to, he didn't like the menorah every day. He didn't offer the Torah every day. So how come when you read the Chumash, Pashup Shad, it sounds like it's Aram? So the Sfarno says that it was Aram. Let's read. Source 3 bays on page 4. Yarv oso Aram. Afal pi shai sahat lochas hanebos, profane Torah satami. Kisher of a Kohen Hedjod, a plain ordinary Kohen, Ladoros. Ladoros means when in your ordinary life, in the outside, past the Midbar. Kibish Mashik Kibu Fazal, Mikolapo Namar, Vishnam Aaron, Ki Omnam, Ko Yame Ha Midbar, Ko Yatinyan Ha Mishkan, the Fo Yom, Ki Inyano Ladoros, Yoma Kippurim. What a line. What an amazing line. What an amazing comparison. The Sfarno says, every day of Bnei Yisrael's ordinary daily life in the Midbar, the level of the Shechina, the level of Kedusha, was just like Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine Yom Kippur every day of the year. That was life in the Midbar. Yom Kippur every day of the year. Oh, so how does that answer the question? Because on Yom Kippur, who did all the body of Yom Kippur? The Kohen Gadol. So since the level of the Shechina, the level of the Kedusha, in the Midbar, every single day of the year was like Yom Kippur, so Taka, in the Midbar, even though it's mutter for an ordinary Kohen to light the menorah and offer the Ketoros, that's not what happened. Aaron did it himself. Because in the Midbar, every day was like Yom Kippur. And therefore, the Kohen Gadol himself did all these avodas. He offered the Ketoros and he lit the menorah. It's an amazing line. It didn't, now, I quote this Sfarno in this context. It gives you a sense of what the Sfas Emes is talking. What were the Meraglim thinking? The Meraglim were thinking, Bnei Yisrael live, every day is Yom Kippur. We don't think they're ready for ordinary life, where Yom Kippur is once a year. That's what was happening. You understand what the Meraglim, they were wrong. Hashem said, you're trying to be with it. You understand what they were thinking. It's hard to leave. You're living a life where every day is Yom Kippur. To go into Eretz Yisrael, the Meraglim thought that to step down, but we're not ready for it. That's a Sfarno. There's a similar Sfarno in the three Aleph. Rav Kubrick points out in the footnotes here that this Sfarno also fits well with another famous idea. I'll just mention it outside. It's an idea which was first said by the Gro, and the Meshach Bachma sort of developed it. It's all here in Rav Kubrick's footnote 7. Also, it's in Rav Kubrick's Meshach Bachma. In Achimos, he discusses it there as well. Which is basically as follows. If you look in Parshas Achimos, that's where the Avodah Yom Kippur is. So if you read the Sukkim carefully, the Chumash says over and over and over again, Aaron HaKohen. Aaron, 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 Aaron. Everything's Aaron. It says Aaron, it says the name all the time. Then at the very end of the Perek, it says, oh, the Kohen does the Avodah. So it's strange. The whole parak is Aaron, 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 Aaron. At the end of the parak is just the Kohen. That's one interesting point in Parshas Akedos. In invite you to prepare to Zion. The second interesting point is the Torah does not give the date at the beginning of Perek Tzayin, beginning of Achrimos. Normally, if you look at all the other parts of the Torah, it says, on the first day of the seventh month, Rosh Hashanah. The date's always the first thing mentioned. You don't put the date at the end. The date's the first month of the year, Bnei Israel came to the Midbar. It's very strange. There's no date mentioned in Achrimos. At the very end of the Perek, it says, oh, on the Kippur, on the tenth day of the seventh month, you do the Avodah. So two points. A, how come the date, the calendar date, the 10th day of the 7th month, is not mentioned? This is the Avodah Yom Kippur, right? Parashas Achrimos is the famous Avodah Yom Kippur. It's not, but why? How come the date's not mentioned until the very end? And two, how come it's Aaron, at the end it mentions the Kohen? So the Gra says, he quotes the Medrash, the Medrash seems to say, the Gra made this Medrash famous, that Aaron HaKohen himself was allowed to do the Avodah Yom Kippur and enter the Kodesh Kadoshim every day of the year. That's the Medrash which the Gra made famous. It's a Medrash that the Gra quotes. That Aaron HaKohen, if he wanted to, had a Rishus to go into the Kodesh Kadoshim doing the Avodah Yom Kippur every day of the year. And that's shot in the Chumash. How come the Chumash doesn't mention the date of Yom Kippur in all of Achrimos, the whole beginning of Achrimos? And how come it mentions Aaron's name? Because that Parsha isn't only on Yom Kippur. In the Midbar, all of Achrimos was when was it applicable? Every day of the year. If it's Aaron, every day of the year. Then at the end of the parak it says, oh, and Ladoros, in the future on Yom Kippur, the Kohen does the Avodah. So how come it mentions the dates and the Kohen? Because in the future, you know, when you leave the Midbar, so then on Yom Kippur, only on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, whoever he's going to be, is going to do the Avodah. That's the famous Gra, which is based on the Medrash. It's a very interesting idea. When it says, Bezos Yav Aaron El HaKodesh, whenever you wanted to, Aaron had a Rishus. You know, today I feel like Kodesh Kadoshim, okay, we're going in, and he would do the Avodah Yom Kippur and go into the Kodesh Kadoshim. So Rav Kugman points out that Gra, and the Mesh Chochma develops that Gra, that Meshech Chochma fits very well with the Sfarno. That's what the Sfarno is saying. Literally, every day was literally like Yom Kippur. A chiyuv that Aaron had to do the Ketoros HaTamid and he had to offer the light the menorah. As a reshus, if Aaron wanted to, he was allowed to literally make every day like Yom Kippur, go into the Kodesh Kedoshim. So that Sfarno and that Gra fit very well together. What I just said is in our Kugman's footnotes, in footnote 7. But Kugman just adds a little knesh, if you're interested. He points out there's a slight difference, that the Sfarno's emphasis is on Bnei Yisrael's overall level in the Midbar. The Gra's emphasis is on who? Is on Aaron. So there might be a difference. But Kugman says, after Aaron died, and Elazar took over, so for those few months in the Midbar, so would this apply? According to the Sfarno, the idea of every other people still apply. According to the Gra, it might be more of an Aaron thing. Okay, that's what Kugman points out. So this Sfarno, this Mesher Chochma, give very good background to this Vasemis. Every day is Yom Kippur. It's very hard to leave. And that was the case of Rabban, and this explains our first. Every day is like Yom Kippur. So we need help in making the transition into Eretz Yisrael. Well, what the transition? Kumash Dvar. How do you make the transition from everyday like Yom Kippur into ordinary, normal daily life? How do you make that transition? The mitzvah to Sefer Dvar. Shema, tzitzis, mezuzah, etc. Got it? That's how I think these things all fit together. Okay, we don't have so much time, but of course, this, our first approach to Kumash Dvar, really, in broad strokes, fits very well with his overall approach to the Mishnah. What is the first overall approach to the Mishnah? I'm not going to read it now. We don't have time. I've read it a few times already. I mentioned, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 times I've read page 5. So I'm not going to read it a 13th time, but you should read it yourselves. I mean, if I had time, I would read it. Don't get me wrong. But I think it's worth a while. But I don't have time. But our first basically says that the basic purpose of the Mishnah was not to serve Hashem well in the Mishkan. The basic purpose of the Mishkan was to be inspired by your time in the Mishkan to serve Hashem well in your ordinary daily life. That's a person's approach to the mission. And he used that to explain many things. It's the very last line, underline on page 5, that's where he says, it should serve as the inspiration for the multiple activities of the nation to concentrate every aspect of Israel's life to Hashem. That's the purpose of the Mishkan. And that's why, if you don't serve Hashem in your ordinary daily life, if you do a gilui arayos and you steal, Hashem destroys the Mishkan. And what's the connection of stealing at home and Hashem destroying the Mishkan? I would have thought our verse says, which mitzvahs would you have to violate for Hashem to destroy the Mishkan? Which ones? What would you have said? Karbanos! You built it wrong! What's wrong? Hashem destroys the Mishkan. No, that's not what it says in the Chumash and in Tanakh and all over the place. It says, if you steal, commit adultery, you don't get stuck up. Hashem destroys the Mishkan. Why? What's the... Here's the idea. The whole purpose of the Mishkan is that it should be a source of inspiration to serve Hashem well in your ordinary daily life. So if your ordinary daily life is terrible, if you're not serving Hashem well, then the Mishkan is not serving its function. Oh, so then it gets destroyed. If it's not using its function, why should it be there? It's not serving its function. If you're not using the Mishkan for what it's supposed to be used for, Hashem takes it away. That's a person's approach to the Mishkan. This idea of moving from the Mishkan into your ordinary daily life is a major theme in our person's writings. It's all over the place. It says in Tehillim, Shasuli b'Beis Hashem, b'chazros elkeinu yafrihu. We're planted in the Beis Hashem, and you blossom in the courtyards. What's that pasuk mean? So our person says the pasuk means, he says metaphorically, Beis Hashem means the life in the Mishnah, in the Beis Hamikdash. B'chazros, in the courtyards, that means what? Your ordinary daily life. That's where you blossom. That's where you live your life. In other words, a Jew should always feel rooted in the Beis Hashem. While you're blossoming in the courtyard, you're blossoming out there. You don't stay in the Beis Hamikdash your whole life. You don't sit in the Beis Hamikdash your whole life. Count people, that's not it. Kohen Gadol did. The ordinary Jews didn't. You lived outside. You lived in Yishon, Kiryat Shmona. You lived wherever you lived. But wherever you live, wherever you blossom, wherever you produce in the world, and you impact it on the world, you always feel shesulim b'beis Hashem. I'm rooted in the Beis Hashem. That pasuk captures our person's approach to the Mishkan. It captures his approach to life. It captures our person. Brachos. This is on source page 6. Page 6, the left column. What is brachos all about? Our person writes basically, Shmona Esrei, that's very intense. You're so connected with Hashem. It's powerful, it's amazing. Okay, then it's over. Once a day, some women daven twice a day. So one, two, three Shmona Esreis a day, wonderful. Yeah, but what about the rest of your life? That's brachos. Rafer says, what are brachos all about? Chazal, Rafer says, wanted to move Avodas this intense connection with Hashem from just one esrei into your ordinary daily life. When you're eating, when you're drinking, when you're going to the bathroom, anything you're doing, you have these mini 10-second Shmona Esreis with Hashem. That's what brachos are all about. That's what he writes here. Let's just read it here. The left column on page 6. Most prominent amongst all the institutions ordained by sages is that of the brachos, with which they meant to transfer the divine service from the periphery of the temple and the altars into the activities and prayers of everyday life. Shmona Esrei is a one-time deal. It's very intense. Yeah, but how does that affect your ordinary life? Bring it with you. Hashem says, I just want to take the Mishkan into ordinary life. Bring Shmona Esrei into ordinary life. How do you do that with brachos? After brachos. Say brachos, that should remind you to Hashem. I'm saying connect with Hashem. Our first use is just to explain the Avodas Kippur. You open up a verse in Vayikra, in Akrimos, the whole theme of the Avodah Shem Kippur is taking this intensely high level of ruchnius, of entering the Kodesh Kadashim with you into your ordinary daily life. What's the last thing the Kohen Gadol does in Yom Kippur? And the Mishnah say, what's the last thing he does? What's the last part of the Avodah? He changes into his ordinary yom tov clothing. In other words, his ordinary clothing, his his non-bite kuna. That's what it says. He puts on his ordinary home clothing. Why? That's the whole point of the avodah. That when the cleansing level is finished, he puts on his ordinary clothes and takes the kodesh gashmi into his ordinary life. I first use this to explain how long we have to eat the korban shlamim. Because you eat the korban shlamim for a day, night, and a day. So the first gives a beautiful, I don't have time for it now, but the first gives a beautiful explanation, beautiful, why it's not the day, it's very weird, very strange. Not really strange, it's very strange. Day, night, day. Day, night, day. Why 2 days and a night? Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. Why? He explains why based on this idea as well. The body of the Aaron. The first basically says that the Aaron symbolizes the Torah, and the Vadin, the pole, symbolize the ability of the Torah to be transferred. So the body arm can never be removed from the arm. Never. Why? Because the Torah can be taken anywhere. The whole idea of the Torah is it applies anywhere in your life. It's not stuck. It's not stuck in Eretz Yisrael. It's not stuck in the Mishnah. Wherever you go, the Torah goes with you. That symbolism of the Vadin, that the body symbolizes the Torah is being moved around. Can be taken anywhere. They're never removed from the Aaron. Because you can never tell me the Torah can't apply here. I can't bring the Torah into New York City. You can't say that. Because the Badim are always in the Aaron. That's the symbolism of the Badim of the Aaron. We're not allowed to be removed. To symbolize that wherever you are in the world, you can bring the Torah with you. This is our first whole approach to the Mishnah. So just before I finish, just to sum up, that our first approach to the Mishnah, which is trying to bring the high level and the intense level of the Shekhinah of the Mishkan into ordinary daily life, is parallel to our Persia's whole approach to Chumash Devarim. That Bnei Yisrael were trying to move from a life where their whole life was right around the Mishkan to a life where they live far from the Mishkan. And didn't it help? And the mitzvahs of Chumash Devarim is that help to make that transition from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael. And this fits with the Svatemis' approach to Chetzer Meraglim. That Bnei Yisrael is moving from Neis Nigla, Neis Nigla, Neis Nigla, to basically Neis Nister with the base of Mikdash in the middle, basically a life of Neis Nister. This is basically the whole theme of Chumash Devarim. And according to the Svatemis, the whole theme of Chetzer Meraglim. And according to our first, the whole theme of the Mishkan and really the whole theme of life itself. And this, of course, brings us to us here in this room. So a lot of us spent last year in Eretz Yisrael, previously spent years in Eretz Yisrael. Now we're trying to remain high-level Benos Torah in America. And it's possible, and it's doable. Thousands of people do it. This is the real challenge, Most people don't stay in Israel forever. They don't stay for a year or two. Most people go to Israel for a year or two. They live in America. That's so that means you have to really do your best to take that special spark. Eretz Yisrael, again, like to move the mashal, for us, Eretz Yisrael is more like the midbar. In Eretz Yisrael, just you're in seminary the whole day. There's connection to the Shekhinah, which you don't have in ordinary daily life in Queens or in Brooklyn. You don't have it in the same way. It's very hard. You don't have the same thing. But the whole challenge, the whole purpose, the whole goal of the years, the time in Eretz Yisrael, is to use that time to inspire us to serve Hashem well in ordinary daily lives. That's the goal. The goal is not just to do well in Israel. The goal is to do well in ordinary life. And doing well in ordinary life means taking the messages of Eretz Yisrael that you learned in seminary with you and maintaining this high level. And it's very doable. Thousands of people do it. And it comes to this program. This program is all about. This program, this is our first. You make the transition. You find you at the summer in between Eretz Yisrael and America, you find you have the summer off. So you want to recharge your batteries and make that transition. You go to Shirin, the Levim. It's not much, it's perfect. The Levim, you have to give respect to the Levim. You have to go to Shirin and find a bunny of teachers here. If you have a teacher from high school who you were close to, so you give her a call, or give him a call, and you try to reconnect and have someone you can talk to. And the whole purpose of the time in Israel is not just serve Hashem there, serve Hashem here in America. And that's what it's all about. To serve Hashem at a high level in ordinary daily lives. You have Aliyah Lorenzo, so if you can afford it, it's a great idea. You come back. As soon as they went to Columbia, I think, is there older than Stern? Is that true? Is there older than Stern? I don't know. She came for 6 weeks to come. It's an amazing thing to do. You can find a way, you visit. But that's what the goal is, that the ordinary daily lives here at home, this is the reality. This is where our home is. To serve Hashem well in ordinary day, you have to do your best to serve Hashem well here in America. So we should always hope that to really live the less of our first approach to Tevarim, our first whole approach to the Mishnah, and make this transition from life for us in Eretz Yisrael, which given us the realities of Eretz Yisrael for us, is such a high level of Kedushin Ruchnius, and take it with us and maintain it as we live our lives here, which is where we live most of our lives, here in America, and serve Hashem well at a very high level here in our ordinary daily lives. On that note, we'll stop here. Okay.
I just wanted to add one point that I wasn't able to complete during this year itself. And that's our Hirsch's approach to the achila, the zman achila of the Karban Shlomim. A Karban Shlomim is eaten for 2 days and a night in the middle. Why that specific time period? So our Hirsch explains as follows. In the Beit HaMikdash, in ordinary Jewish life, the day begins at night, night followed by day. Shabbat starts at night, Yom Tov starts at night. In the Beis HaMikdash, the day is day followed by night. You offer a carbon during the day, and the leftovers are eaten, the leftovers are burnt at night. You have 1 day to eat a carbon, that means, let's say, a carbon chatas, the Kohanim can eat it for 1 day. It's the day followed by the night. It's night followed by day. That is how the day works in the Beis HaMikdash. So first wants to say as follows. The idea of a 2 days with a night in the middle time period is a merging of a Beis HaMikdash day into an ordinary day. A merging of the Beis HaMikdash, literally a merging, day-night merge into night-day, into an ordinary day. And that leaves you with a combined time period of day-night-day. What's this merging? Our first explains, that's the Karban Shlamim. A Karban Shlamim is taking meat from a Karban that was offered on the Beis HaMikdash and eating it outside the Beis HaMikdash anywhere in the old city of Yerushalayim. You're eating a Karban for dinner. That is the ultimate example of literally bringing the Beis HaMikdash with you into your ordinary daily life. So our first says that of all the ideas of that we discussed about the Mishkan, the Karban Shlamim best captures this theme of the basic purpose of the Mishkan being bringing the experience of the Mishkan back with you into your ordinary daily life. And to express that notion, to symbolize that notion, the time period you're given to eat the Karban Shlamim is exactly day, night, day. 2 days with the night in the middle. The message being, you're taking a Beis HaMikdash day and merging it into a whole day, and which is exactly the theme of the Karban Shlamim, which is exactly the whole purpose of the Mishkan in general. So that's our Hirsch's Vort about the Zman Achila of the Karban Shlamim and how it fits very well into his whole approach to the Mishkan generally. Okay, so with that, we'll really stop here.